The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The Definitive Guide to How to Travel the World, 500 books, £63 million sterling when it was sold, even when a portion of it was sold, not even the total value of the company, all founded by Tony and Maureen Wheeler. Tony is with us. Tony, founder of The Lonely Planet Guide. It is a nice thing to be able to say that you are. And I believe not only are you the founder of The Lonely Planet Guide, you are the man who wrote the first guide to Dublin.
Yeah, we did. We did Ireland as part of our Western Europe guide, first of all. And then we thought, well, this is good. Let's do an Ireland guide. And then we thought, well, that was good. Let's pull out Dublin as well. And I remember that first guide, I spent 21 days at one stage in Dublin, and I moved hotels every day. Every day I'd get up and I'd shift to a new hotel or bed and breakfast or hostel or something. You name it, I tried it.
What sort of overall review did you give us? Were we worth a visit?
Oh, absolutely. I just loved it. I even went down to the, where do you swim out into the ocean?
Oh, the 40 foot in Sandy Cove.
Oh, I absolutely did. It was freezing, absolutely icy. But, you know, if you're a guidebook writer, you've got to do these things.
Now, when I was going through school, we have this thing here called the CAO, where you choose the kind of courses that you want to do. I don't recall guidebook writer being on any of the list. How did you find it as a career?
I tumbled into it. Maureen and I, we set out from London back in 1972 in an old car, and we thought we'll drive this as far as it goes. And it went all the way to Afghanistan. And we eventually ended up in Australia, and we met so many people who said, what did you do? Where did you go? What did it cost?
Hang on, Tony. You drove a car, in a 1972 car, from London to Afghanistan.
Yeah, not only that, we sold it for a £5 profit when we got there. It was a great trip, absolutely. And that was the start of Lonely Planet. It was traveling and places where at that time there was no information available. And we decided to make the information available.
But the risk must have been huge. If you're going to places where, I mean, like that, driving across to Afghanistan, just two of you in a van, that's dangerous.
Yeah. No, these things are always more dangerous than the scary press reports than they are in real life. People are people everywhere, and I don't think people want to be mean. They want to be helpful.
So at what point did you begin to think, not only are we into something now that is interesting from a tourism point of view, this thing is commercially good as well?
Well, when people started to buy the books, and we did our first book, we were living in Sydney in Australia, saving up enough money, we thought, to come back to Europe, although that didn't happen. And we just met people and talked about where we'd been, and then we produced this book ourselves. We did it on a table of our sort of basement flat in Sydney. And amazingly, we took it around bookshops and it sold. And people loved it right from the start. And we thought, well, God, there's a market here. Let's chase it.
A market that's what, north now of 40 million books sold?
Oh, way more than that. When Maureen and I sold out of the business like 15 or more years ago now, and we were beyond 150 million at that point.
150 million copies.
Yeah, and that's in English. You know, there's an awful lot of books sold in Lonely Planet Guides in Spanish and Italian and French and German and even Chinese.
So did it become, it must have become a vast machine. You must have had teams working all the way around the world all the time, did you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we at the point that we sold out, we had around 500 staff. So it was a lot of people. And there was always, you know, 100 plus writers out on the road. And, you know, one of the things about it is, I mean, Maureen and I loved doing these books. It was such fun. But so was everybody who worked for us seemed to love it as well. You know, the writers loved doing it. The people in the office all loved working on them. It was a great place to be.
And were you able to keep doing it throughout, or did you end up shackled to a desk running the business?
You know, I was very lucky in that way that I was not too shackled to the desk. There was this saying, you know, when things go wrong, Tony will be in Tibet. I knew to avoid trouble. And I was lucky that even right to the end, I was able to keep on working on books. And I just love working on them. And, you know, and I still travel a lot. So the travel enthusiasm is still there.
Where do you want to go next?
Oh, well, I'm going in a few weeks to Greece in about a week's time with a bunch of friends. And then I'm going, I like to go somewhere new every year. And amazingly, I had never been to Jamaica. So Jamaica is on my list.
Presumably you've been to other chunks of the Caribbean, Caribbean, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. I've been to Cuba. I've been to Haiti. Well, when I was a kid, I lived in the Bahamas for 2 years when I was about 7 years old. And I've been to a lot of the Caribbean, but for some reason, Jamaica has just escaped me.
Give me then the bit, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but you know that the Wordsworth, the inward eye in moments of solitude, when you're not thinking about it, what are the parts of the planet that flash into your mind?
Oh, look, so many. You know, places you go back to, and I don't need to go to Italy anymore. I've been in Italy up and down from the toe to the mountains and the top. And yet I love going back. Every time I go back there, I have a good time. The people are wonderful. The food is great. You know, there's a style of life in Italy, which is wonderful. But equally, Nepal, I've been to Nepal many times. And if you want to go walking, well, Ireland is amazing for walking. This is a great country for walking. But so is Nepal. And the mountains are a bit higher in Nepal. You know, I've walked up to the Everest Base Camp. I've walked around the Annapurna Mountains. I've walked up to the border with Tibet. And every walk has been great.
The areas then on the other side, the ones that you don't want to go back to ever.
Look, I've had some flack recently because I said, you know, USA is off my visit list. And I tell you, if Taco Trump keeps doing the sort of things that he does do, I'm going to keep it on my not visit list, which is a shame because I've spent a lot of time there.
And geographically, it has to be said, I mean, there's places like the Painted Desert are just
awe-inspiring. There's a lot of it that's awe-inspiring, you know, and I've driven Route 66 and I've been to New York. Last time was in December, so quite recently, many times. And I've lived in San Francisco for a year and a half. I left my heart there as you do. You know, so I've got lots of fun and I've got lots of American friends. But God, the American president, take him away.
Did you feel any pressure when you were writing the book? Because I don't know, it's a slightly parochial thing, but there was always a thing in Ireland when a Lonely Planet guide would come out, when anybody ever reviewed us, you'd sort of race through to make sure that it was saying positive things. Did you have a sense about that you had to be balanced but complimentary about areas that you were in?
Yeah, you know, and in both directions. Because one of the things we learned after a while was that you can be too complimentary. And, you know, if you sort of rave about some place, and if it's a place that you have, you know, in Ireland, there's lots of people who are influencers. If you want to find a good restaurant, there's a dozen different routes to finding a good restaurant. But at one stage, we had a big influence in Vietnam. And it was almost as if we said, this is the place to go, everybody went there. And the place next door, which was really just about as good, got ignored. So we learned at that stage to be enthusiastic, but not to be too enthusiastic. Not to let it get away with itself. But on the other hand, it's kind of fun sometimes to stir things around. And we had wonderful fun in Britain with criticizing the Queen's taste and saying how Land's End was a bit of a tourist shambles. And, you know, you say these things and the Brits get all upset and angry. And that's great.
Out of curiosity, are you the reason that The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy exists?
I'd like to take The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It'd be a good place to find the meaning of life, wouldn't it? No, that came at the same time as I saw Before Us or something.
No, I don't think so. I think that was late 70s. You were 72, weren't you? You were knocking around for
72,
a few.
Yeah, maybe the two did interact in some way.
Well, you will recall that the Hitchhiker's Guide had two essential principles. One was printed on the front cover was the calming words, "Don't panic." And the other was that everywhere you went, you had to bring a towel because it was the single most useful thing to have in the universe. What did you learn from all the travels? What's the equivalent of "Don't panic and bring a towel"?
Well, I think "Don't panic" is a terrific one. And, you know, we always said with our books that one of the essential information in this town in the middle of nowhere, and you come out of the train station, you turn right and there'll be a good hotel in two blocks, and you turn left and you'll be mugged within one block. You know, and that's good don't panic sort of information. Oh, look, I mean, what do you need when you're traveling? You need two things. You need your passport and a credit card. And if you've got those two, everything else disappears, you can always buy another towel and a change of underwear.
And do you find that the method of travel makes a difference? Because obviously you started with that highly profitable trip to Afghanistan. Do you still like to do it under your own steam, or is first class and arrive to a 4-star hotel now the way?
Oh, 5-star if possible. No, look, you know, people say, are you still staying in those places with just a few euro a night? Look, I don't need to, you know, if there's a choice between bed bugs and 5-star, you'll find me in 5-star. But there's lots of places in the world that if you want to go there, you're going to do it economically, because there's no other choice. You know, that's all there is. The hostel is the best place in town. And I like traveling slowly. You know, I love walking places. I'm a keen cyclist. So you can put me on my bicycle and I'll ride somewhere. And, you know, you don't want to go too fast.
Tech saying, hello, Anton. What an absolute joy to listen and hear somebody who adored their job and expresses it so. At what point did you hang up the pen in all of this? Because you're still traveling. Are you still writing?
Yeah, I'm still writing. And it's not not for guidebooks anymore. But I wrote a book just 2 years ago in Australia for the National Library. They said, you've been all around, you know, looking at our islands. Write us a sort of coffee table book about, and do you know Australia has over 7,000 islands?
No.
It's amazing. Not just the Barrier Reef. They're all around Australia. More islands than the Caribbean has.
Tony, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
I've been doing the maths on this, and your first trip was 1972, which means that you must be at least north of 40. You don't sound it. What age are you?
Oh God, I'll be 79 this year. So, you know, 80 is the next big birthday with a zero after it.
Well, I tell you what, you would not know what to talk to you.
Well, I hope not. I hope I keep on that way.
Well, it has been a great pleasure talking to you, and I hope we get to do it again, Tony. Thank you so much. That is Tony Wheeler, who is co-founder of The Lonely Planet Guide.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.